From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Oh, thanks very much, Simon. How you doing? Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, after a long absence, Max Egan returns to the Richie Allen Radio Show. He joins us live from Australia, from Brisbane, in the second hour. It'll be 3 a.m. there, and it's very good of Max to get up. At least I hope he'll be up to do it. So, lot to talk about with him. Before that, the brilliant Tony Gosling, former BBC journalist, BCFM, of course, you know him from there as well. He'll be on with me to discuss the day's news. Tony Gosling this hour, Max Egan in hour two. That is Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. And, well, it gets curiouser and curiouser, Lewis Carroll. The UK has reached a perilous turning point since Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister. He set out a raft of new coronavirus measures and restrictions, which might last for 6 months. Shop staff having to wear face masks, weddings curtailed to a maximum of 15 people, including the celebrant. And fines for breaking laws on gatherings and not wearing a mask have been increased to £200 for a first offence. He warned, did Johnson, that significantly greater restrictions could come if necessary. Here he is, the pudgy, porky-telling person, Johnson, earlier today.
This is the moment when we must act. If we can curb the number of daily infections and reduce the reproduction rate to one, then we can save lives, protect the NHS and the most vulnerable, and shelter the economy from the far sterner and more costly measures that would inevitably become necessary later on. So we're acting on the principle that a stitch in time saves nine. The government will introduce new restrictions in England, carefully judged to achieve the maximum reduction in the R number with the minimum damage to lives and livelihoods.
That's a lie, by the way.
I want to stress that this is by no means a...
They're aiming for maximum damage to lives and livelihoods. Maximum, not minimum.
To the full lockdown of March, we're not issuing a general instruction to stay at home. We will ensure that schools, colleges and universities stay open because nothing is more important than the education, health and well-being of our young people. We will ensure that businesses can stay open in a COVID compliant way. However, we must take action to suppress the disease. First, we are once again asking office workers who can work from home to do so.
This is gaslighting. Last week, the advice was, please get back into the town centre you previously travelled to in order to revive it, to get it back up off of its knees. Now, we want you to stay at home again. Gaslighting? You got that right.
In key public services and in all professions where home working is not possible, such as construction or retail, people should continue to attend their workplaces. And like government, this House will be free to take forward its business in a COVID-secure way, which you, Mr. Speaker, have pioneered. Second, from Thursday, all pubs, bars and restaurants must operate a table service only, Mr. Speaker, except for takeaways. Together with all hospitality venues, they must close at 10 p.m.
Which is going to destroy them. If they're in dire straits as it is, this is going to basically destroy the hospitality industry. It isn't conjecture now. It isn't melodrama. This will destroy the hospitality industry, as I believe it is meant to do.
And to help the police enforce this rule, I'm afraid that means, alas, closing and not just calling for last orders, because simplicity is paramount.
You won't get the bell at 5 to 10 or at 10 to 10, enabling you to get another 4 double Bacardi and Cokes and then sit there and drink them while the doormen walk around calling time. You'll have to be out by 10.
The same will apply to takeaways, though deliveries can continue thereafter. And I'm sorry that this will affect many businesses just getting back on their feet, but we...
This will affect many businesses getting back on their feet. You got that right.
But we must act to stop the virus from being transmitted in bars and restaurants. Third, we will extend the requirement to wear face coverings to include staff in retail, all users of taxis and private hire vehicles, and staff and customers in indoor hospitality, except when seated at a table to eat or drink. Fourth, in retail, leisure and tourism and other sectors, our COVID secure guidelines will become legal obligations. Businesses will be fined and could be closed if they breach the rules.
Closed. We'll close your business if you breach the rules. We will close your business.
Fifth, now is the time to tighten up the rule of six. I'm afraid that from Monday, a maximum of 15 people will be able to attend wedding ceremonies and receptions, though up to 30 can still attend a funeral as now.
Yeah, the 15 for the wedding includes, as I mentioned, the celebrant. And I'm not sure if the 30 at the funeral includes the deceased. We'll have to figure that one out as we go along, I suppose.
We will also have to extend the rule of six to all adult indoor team sports.
Rule of six to all adult indoor team sports. So your five-a-side is faked. Three-a-side now.
Finally, we have to acknowledge that the spread of the virus is now affecting our ability to reopen business conferences, exhibitions and large sporting events.
Yes, there'll be no return to football stadiums and rugby stadiums from October. That's gone. This will condemn teams in the National League, teams in League Two, teams in League One, professional teams. This is condemning them to death, effectively.
So we will not be able to do this from the 1st of October, and I recognise the implications for our sports clubs, which are the life and soul of our communities.
But he doesn't give a shit, really.
Communities, and my right honourable friends, the Chancellor and Culture Secretary, are working urgently on what we can do now to support them.
Boris Johnson, so why is this happening? Well, it's happening because it's our fault. Says who? Says Margaret Harris, the World Health Organization spokeswoman. We better learn to dance, says Margaret, or we're stuck with this.
Learn to live the new normal, not the old normal, but unfortunately people went back to the old normal and we are indeed seeing a big rise in transmission. Should have listened to the message. Now it's a hard one.
We should have listened to the message.
It's a very hard one in the middle of summer. People felt they'd done their bit and they were looking for their rewards. So there was too much physical contact, too many gatherings.
Too many gatherings, too much physical contact. We dicked around in the summer.
I mean, it wasn't necessarily the pubs and nightclubs. A lot of the gatherings were in homes. People just thought they really were going back to this old normal. We have to learn the new dance, the coronavirus dance, to protect ourselves.
What? What kind of fuckery are you? What was that?
We have to learn the new dance, the coronavirus dance, to protect ourselves.
The coronavirus dance. Is that a medical term? The coronavirus dance. It gave me an idea. It's got to be some money in this, the coronavirus dance, eh? Eh? C C C C O O O O V V V V I I I I D D D D 19, the COVID-19 dance. Yes, learn the COVID dance. Jesus, Mary, and Holy Saint Joseph. You got to learn the dance. I didn't make that up. You actually heard that.
We have to learn the new dance, the coronavirus dance.
Learn the coronavirus dance to protect ourselves. I can't learn the new coronavirus dance. I was going to say that I'm still trying to learn the Macarena, but the truth is I haven't mastered this bloody thing yet. Hey? Get in. Oh, Jesus. Do you remember? You remember Benel Madena? Or Benel Medina, as the Dublin housewives used to say. Benel Madena. Benel Medina. Summer holidays back in Spain, 1982. Watching my mother and her new mates falling arse over tit. Doing the chicken dance and agadoo-doo-doo. You remember black lace and all that? God be with the days. So simple were those days, eh? You got on a plane, You got pissed on the plane. You smoked on the plane. You disembarked. You got pissed at the other airport in Malaga. You got pissed on the coach at 3 o'clock in the morning that took you to the apartment where you got pissed again. Then you jumped into the pool. When you came out of the pool, you had San Miguel. You thought you were sophisticated. You might have had a sangria. 2 weeks, happy days. Gone. Gone. Never again. The army is coming, apparently, to assist the police. Here's Adam Bolton with Adam Bolton with Beth Rigby.
One other thing, we're hearing more details about the army being called in. What are they going to
do? Yes, this is interesting. Look, back in March, when the government originally introduced their COVID or outlined a COVID plan for the country, there was some reference to the military there that they might be used for support for the civil services. And today, the Prime Minister toughening up enforcement, saying there would be more fines if you break the six-person rule. If you don't wear a mask, the first fine will now be £200. And he said that there were going to be more police on the streets to enforce it. And he also said that he was keeping on the table the option of using the military. But just to confirm, the military wouldn't be policing all of us, but they would be used to, say, defend Downing Street or in Street or go and defend certain critical infrastructure sites.
Defending Downing Street from who? From Piers Corbyn? Wow. The army wouldn't be policing us. Don't worry, it's okay. They'd be freeing the police up to chase you around your garden to make sure you've only got six people in your house. Oh, be God, huh? Let's move on. Joel Dunning is a consultant cardiothoracic surgeon. Apparently he performs triple bypasses on velociraptors or something like that. I don't know. He was on BBC Radio 5 this morning explaining why, as an individual, we cannot be allowed to take our chances with this deadly virus. We're all in it together.
In a pandemic, you can't choose what risk you'd like to personally take. Because if you decide yourself, okay, I'm going to take some risks because I don't mind getting the virus, you are part of a chain. And you will give it to three people and they might be okay. They'll give it to nine and they'll give it to 27. And one of those 27 people is going to be elderly or infirm and they're going to pass away.
Fuck them.
So actually, you've been part of that chain. So unfortunately, in a pandemic, it's not possible for me to make my own decision. It's absolutely vital for everybody, really, to have a healthy debate, but to follow the changing rules. And unfortunately, the rules will change dependent on how prevalent the virus is. But we've got to get together.
Anders Tegnell, sure. Anders Tegnell, the head of public health, controversial figure, head of public health in Sweden, said that lockdowns like this, like killing a fly with a hammer.
Yeah, once in the blue moon, Nikki Campbell asks a good question. Lockdowns don't work. What do you think? Joel Dunning, the cardiothoracic surgeon.
So I would not want to be the person making the rules as to what lockdown measures we take. My only message would be that we must follow the rules. It's not like breaking the speed limit on the motorway, where that's a personal choice and you only harm yourself. Yeah. This is a group decision. So whatever the government tell us, yes, it is really good to have Emma's voice and it's good to have other voices and it's good to have debate. But the most important thing is that we follow the changing rules.
Yeah.
And that is difficult and we don't like following rules. Because we love sort of having our own choice. But in a pandemic,
we love sort of having our own choice. Yeah, that's a good idea. We have our own choice. But in a pandemic,
we do just have to follow the rules.
Follow the rules.
Because that's why we have government and government structures.
That's why we have governments. Joel Dunning, cardiothoracic surgeon. James O'Brien, LBC Radio, national radio these days, about the worst radio presenter in living history, in living memory. Absolutely garbage. He's so bad he's nearly good, is O'Brien. O'Brien took it upon himself today to explain the let's kick everybody out of the pub at 10 p.m. rule. O'Brien says he kind of understands it and takes us on a meandering journey to how the government and Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, reached the decision. Have a listen.
The best way to explain it is, look, 6 o'clock to 11 o'clock is a five-hour window.
Five-hour window.
In which you could contract coronavirus in an environment where we have learned that infection becomes most likely. So indoors, large numbers of people trying to observe social distancing, not wearing masks by dint of the fact that they have to put the ale and the grub in their gobs. So not wearing masks, therefore high level of possibility of infection. 6 to 11, 5-hour window in which probably the risk is highest in the final hour. Would you agree? How long is it since we pointed out that you might arrive at the Dog and Duck with every intention of observing the social distancing regulations slavishly, but 4 pints in, suddenly your resolve somewhat crumbles. So it's a 5-hour window, 6 to 11, the final hour of which sees an increase in the likelihood of infection. Therefore, closing at 10 is designed to reduce the size of the window in which you could get an infection with a side order, a slightly optimistic side order.
A side order. I wish somebody had explained this to me earlier on.
Side order. Because as many people have pointed out, you might, if you're in the pub solely to get tanked up, you might just, you know, order a couple of shots at 10 to 10.
He gets paid for this. And I would guess he's paid six figure. He's paid in the region of six figures, James O'Brien. Can you believe that? He gets paid for this.
Instead of stringing 3 pints over the next hour, but with a side order, an optimistic side order of reducing the sort of drunkenness indoors that would see your aerosol spreading across.
Aerosol spreading.
Across the floor of the
Are you asleep yet?
Of the Dog and Duck in a way that it wouldn't do a little earlier in the evening. Now, don't shoot the messenger. I am explaining, not endorsing, this idea. Because it is, I think, like all experiments, one in which the proof will be in the pudding. We will have to see whether it works, to know whether it's wise.
But
I don't, at the moment, feel minded to join in the queue, to join the queue of people castigating the idea.
Why would you? Why would you do your job? You know, why would you not try to poke holes in it? It is 20 minutes past the hour. I hope you're well this Tuesday, 22nd of September 2020. My name is Richie Allen, the BBG, not the BBC. Tony Gosling is standing by and will join me in a couple of minutes' time. Looking forward to that. Later on, Max Egan from Brisbane. How cool is that? Max Egan from Brisbane, live 3 a.m. there. Let's hope he's up, eh? Let's hope he's up, eh? In the meantime, a tune.
We have to learn the new dance, the coronavirus dance, to protect ourselves.
Yeah. Mustang Sally, The Commitments on The Richie Allen Show. Mustang Sally, The Commitments version of that. Andrew Strong on vocals there. Some of my Irish listeners will remember Rob Strong, his dad, who was an amazing singer, is an amazing singer. Is Rob Strong going strong still? I hope he is. Welcome back to the programme. In a couple of moments, Tony Gosling will wing his way back onto the show. Later on, Max Egan, you can tweet the show and have your say. My Twitter handle has never changed. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Coming up later this week on the show, Mark Windows tomorrow, Sarah Westall on Thursday, and I'll have one or two surprise guests along the way as well, which I'll be glad to introduce you to as we go. Lot of comments on the statement by UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson today, to basically see what people are tweeting to me. You very simply put Richie Allen Show, all one word, into the search bar on Twitter, Richie Allen Show, press enter, and you will then even see what people are tweeting to myself. Let's try Tony again. It's been a week of this, hasn't it? It's been a week. You get weeks like that when you do live radio. You get months where things don't go wrong. You get a week every now and then when you can't connect to people and things go wrong and you have to fill and waffle and all the rest of it. Trying to connect to Tony G in Bristol, not happening at the moment. We can always take another tune in the event that he isn't there, but I'm going to give him a minute. I'll read some comments in the meantime as well. No sign of him at the moment. That's okay. Right, we'll do this back in a minute. Hopefully with Tony Gosling. If not, we'll go another way.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through
Lighthouse. It's obvious what happened there. Tony Gosling is late and he's rung me. How you doing, Tony? Welcome back to the program. Hello. Hello, are you there? Am I hearing you?
Oh, yeah.
What a week this has been. Listen, before we go any further, I've got to say something. I invited Tony Gosling. I invited him to submit his excellent program to me so it could be rebroadcast on my channel on Sunday mornings. I asked him, he didn't ask me, and he graciously said yes, and I haven't done it yet. But from this coming Sunday at midday and every Sunday thereafter, when I finished Sunday View, you will hear Tony's excellent programme rebroadcast from the previous Friday on this stream. So there you go. Thanks for being there today, pal. Good to talk to you. We're screwed, right?
No, we're definitely not screwed. I think actually the Scots and the Welsh seem to be a little bit. And that what I would suggest is because these autonomous so-called parts of the UK are more in the thrall of the New World Order, with the Welsh Parliament and the Scottish Parliaments both, it seems to me, much more, well, less democratic than London. But I mean, I don't see there's going to be any much of a difference. Certainly for anyone that doesn't go to the pub very often, then it's not going to make much difference, is it?
Tell that to the publicans, the hoteliers, the wedding venues, sports, people who run sports clubs, people who run legions, people who run community associations like the one here in Salford. It's going to have a devastating effect on them.
It's going to make a big effect on those people. But I think what's happened here, in fact, we had Matt Hancock was supposed to be making an announcement yesterday, which he cancelled. It was announced on the TV and the radio. Are we going to be hearing from him soon? No, that all then got cancelled and delayed. And I think that they're kind of running scared, basically. Richie Sunak is saying to them, look, guys, if you decide you want another lockdown, you better be absolutely 100% sure that it's necessary, because you could crash the economy. The stock market was wobbling yesterday, so and all sorts of stocks and shares, apart from the bank stocks, which, by the way, were going down anyway because of HSBC, another massive fraud by them. So there's a warning signs that the stock market was not going to accept this next lockdown, and possibly the economy could start wavering. I mean, it's teetering on the brink anyway. So if you look at these sorts of things like wedding venues, etc., it's actually quite a minority thing, and I would imagine that the discussions taking place have been around the economics of this, saying, well, that smaller, less important venues like that, we can handle that economically, but we can't handle another lockdown. Otherwise, the economy really is going to go off the edge.
Hang on a second. No reopening of UK stadiums in the country. 15 people only at weddings, including the celebrant. 30 at funerals. Pubs to close at 10. Increased fines to £200. The army to protect Downing Street and other locations of importance. I could go on and on and on. Where's the upside in this? There is no upside. The devastation is going to be overwhelming.
I totally disagree with you. I don't think that any of these measures...
For a virus that doesn't exist.
...in a massive amount. I think that what they've done is they've realised that they've got to keep the economy going. And so they're tinkering around the edges with most of these, Richie. I don't see any of those. Saying that the army might be brought in to protect Downing Street, things like this. That, it's a token gesture saying the army might be brought in. And they might have been brought in anyway. So this is just trying to, I think, to placate those like Keir Starmer, etc., and Nicola Sturgeon, who are calling for more and more and more draconian measures for a lockdown that doesn't need to happen, because all we're getting is increased cases. We're not seeing any increase in deaths at all.
But we might not be getting any increase in cases, because a developing story in the last 48 hours, which I've covered, I'm sure you've covered as well, is that of those testing positive, it's very likely that 9 out of 10 positive tests are in fact false positive tests. This virus doesn't even exist by the looks of it. So where's the government on that? Why is Boris Johnson not listening to Carl Hennigan and other academics around the country?
There's certainly a virus does exist. This virus,
a flu,
H614G, is a coronavirus. It's a mutation of the original one, which was killing lots of people back in March and April and May. But it's nowhere near as dangerous. So people have been being tested for that. But this is news to me that 9 out of 10 of the tests may be false positives. But you know what? People who are involved in the whole testing regime and the track and trace regime, companies like Serco, private companies, this is absolutely crazy, giving these sorts of things to private companies to do. They should be being managed directly by the Department for Health, because Serco, for example, who are involved in this whole procedure, they've been time and time again found to be fraudulent. They were claiming loads of money from the government for tags on people who had either died or already been released. Yeah. So why on earth would we be trusting these people, other than that it's a close mate of one of the people in Parliament, or else, I think, isn't it Mr. Soames, a Conservative Party donor,
that's right,
and Conservative Party member, and former MP's brother, etc., that's in charge of Serco. So, you know, it's quite possible that many, many of these, you're quite right, quite possible that many of these cases are not cases at all, that they could be false positives. And the most important thing to understand, I think, in all of this, Richie, is that we've got in about 10 days' time, it's a week now, we've got the potential renewal of the six-month Coronavirus Act. In other words, to give all these powers of decree back to the government for another 6 months to do what they want without asking Parliament or anyone else.
And that will happen because Labour will wave it through. Listen, let me ask you this. Vernon Coleman was on this programme yesterday, and we were reflecting on a story in the Sunday Times about how flu has disappeared in Australia and in New Zealand. This isn't conjecture, this is a fact. And Vernon Coleman said, Dr. Vernon Coleman, Richie, months ago, and he did because the videos are there to prove it, I called this. Flu is disappearing because they have basically changed the name of flu to COVID. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, okay, so I'm not a doctor. As I understand it, COVID-19 is a coronavirus, which is the common cold virus. It's not the same as the flu virus. It's a different type of virus. The coronavirus, I think, has been chosen for what I believe is a biological weapon release in Wuhan. Whether it was by the Chinese or by the Americans or by the British, God only knows. But the coronavirus was released as a carrier for this genetically engineered virus, or the originator, because the coronavirus, the common cold, is the most contagious of these types of viruses. So they've pegged the SARS protein and the AIDS protein onto a coronavirus, genetically modified it, and then released it. Now, this is not the same as the flu virus, as I understand it. And one thing I can tell you, though, is there was a fascinating study I read when I was still over in New Zealand, which was quite early days for all of this, saying that we've got a bunch of American soldiers who've all gone down.
Yeah, I remember.
With the COVID-19, or as it was, SARS-CoV-2 illness there. And they looked into it and they found that, remember, these are sort of 20-year-old men, extremely fit, suddenly going down with SARS-CoV-2 or COVID, what we now know as COVID-19. There's a question there. Why would all these soldiers have gone down with it? And they looked into it. And the American Army, I was looking at this, I think it was the beginning of April this year, the American Army had a good look at this, American medical part, and said, oh, well, the common denominator between all these soldiers that went down with it is that they had the flu vaccine. They didn't really maybe need to, as young men like that, but they did. And so this tells us something very important, I think, which needs to have proper scrutiny, by Parliament and the press. And Dr. Judith Brown, who's a colleague of mine here, lives near Bristol, she did a fantastic speech about this in the park, because she can't get coverage on the local papers for it, saying that please do not have the flu vaccine, because if you do have the flu vaccine, it can make you much, much more vulnerable to this coronavirus, whether it's the original version that you catch or the denuded version that's mutated. So, I mean, that's, I think, such an important message. message to get out there, but no one seems to be, very few people seem to realise that actually having the flu vaccine can make you much
might
more
make you ill. Might make you ill. It might do. It also might lead to a positive coronavirus test if you have the flu vaccine. This is something to keep in mind as well. Town centres have been destroyed. The only companies, the only corporations doing anything out of this are the companies like Serco that you mentioned. Obviously, Amazon is having an absolute ball. The pharmaceutical companies are rolling around like pigs in shit at the moment.
Sydney, by the way, Richie, did you see that they've got a National Security Agency member of staff now on the board of Amazon?
I didn't, my friend. No, this is news to me.
I just noticed that. I think over the weekend I saw that story. I mean, just popped up. Unbelievable and absolutely appalling that we've got, you know, the main retailer is now in bed with the, you know, GCHQ equivalent in this country. You know, so everybody's details, whatever, are lost.
We've just lost Tony momentarily. Let's hope we get him back. He's outdoors and he's mobile. He's outdoors and he's mobile. Let's see, can we get him back on? 10 and a half minutes past the hour. Are you there? Lost him. Let's reconnect with him. Hopefully we'll get a better line this time. Tony Gosling, BCFM presenter, former BBC reporter, live on The Richie Allen Show this Tuesday, the 22nd of September 2020. I think he's in a bad area there. I have a few more bones I want to pick with him about these figures, so I hope we get him back on. You're back. We lost you momentarily.
Yeah. Security services over here in the UK and in the US were using people's online retail purchases to put spy devices in those on the way they got to you. Yeah, so you order a laptop from Amazon or whoever, and there's a little unit that somewhere who will intercept that in the post or on the courier service, stick some sort of surveillance device in it before it gets to you. So this is what bothers me about NSA people sitting on the board of Amazon. In a way, it's almost formalizing that sort of process.
My listeners are cheesed off with you. That's no bad thing. It's no good thing. It's good. We like to have a debate. Let me summarize.
Cheesed off with me, the better, Richie.
Listen, I know.
I'm quite happy to answer their criticism.
You've got thick skin, as I do. So don't interrupt me. Let me summarize where I am on this very briefly, and then you come back. Again, today we heard about tens of thousands of redundancies, not possible redundancies, redundancies, tens of thousands. It's almost thousands on a daily basis. We know that there are people living on life support, working from home because they're on the furlough scheme. The jobs are gone anyway. The jobs are ghost jobs. By the end of October, they're gone. We're talking millions of people. The high streets have been destroyed. Right, I could go on about hospitality again. I could go on about sports, travel, aerospace. You're talking millions. All for a virus. And I am willing to concede that you might be right about what it actually is, because I'm not a big-headed arsehole who thinks he knows everything. I don't. You might be spot on. But all for a virus that killed 99% of the people it killed were older people, much older, with comorbidities. It doesn't do anything to virtually everybody else. And my listeners are saying, is Tony Gosling giving the government a pass on this? They're destroying the world that we live in, and they're paving the way for a dystopian future where you'll have to carry a health passport around, you'll have to beg to be allowed to go to a football match or to a concert, and if you don't have the right vaccine, you won't be allowed to go. Why are you cheerful, they're saying? Where's the upside?
I'm not saying I'm cheerful. I don't think there should be any restrictions at all. But I think the government at least is pushing back a bit against the World Health Organization and the pharmaceutical industry, who are the main lobby, really, in Westminster, that are pushing for the reintroduction and the ratification again of this Coronavirus Act in a couple of weeks' time. That's what all this is about. And for them not to be agreeing to another lockdown, I mean, basically, the Scots and the Welsh seem to be going for much, much stricter measures than Boris has gone for. But let's not, you know, let's understand that the government, at least to a certain extent, is pushing back against this pharmaceutical lobby, which has infiltrated the civil service. It was quite obvious listening to Chris Whitty yesterday speaking, the civil servant, and it was quite good to see that there was no politician that would dare to stand next to him as he was speaking. It was basically churning out pharmaceutical industry rubbish, the same sort of nonsense that we were getting from Neil Ferguson back in March before he was sacked. Exactly the same kind of stuff.
Hang on a second. Are you happy that Bill Gates' plants in the UK government, hang on, were allowed to take over Downing Street effectively with no politician standing alongside them? Doesn't that tell you that there's been a coup, Tony? And it's succeeded. These guys are running the country now.
I think there's political pushback against them is what I'm saying.
Where, though?
From Boris, mainly, and Tony. Also from some of the other politicians who are not literally in the UK going down the same sort of road. I just thank God we're not in Wales and we're not in Scotland, because we seem to be getting much, much less measures here than we are than they have in those other two countries, which seem to be far more captured by this system than the UK. Look, let's not forget, at the end of the day, we are in an economic cliff edge anyway. Martin Summers and I, on the programme we do in Bristol, we've been talking about this really since 2008 when the programme first started, is that we're going more and more and more towards an economic collapse, 1929 style, basically. Stock market collapse and everything. The thing is, what are they going to blame it on? Obviously, you know, Brexit is one thing they'd love to blame it on. But the other one now, of course, is COVID. And they've even been so cheeky at the World Economic Forum, Richie, as to prepare everything for the Great Reset next January. So I think between now and January, we're going to get the announcement, you know, on a Monday morning or whatever on the BBC. Oh, I'm very sorry, everybody, but the stock market collapsed when it opened this morning, you know. And everybody's lost all their share money. Because, you know, if you think about what the effect of having low interest rates at the bank means, it means that anyone that actually wants their money to grow has got to put it into the stock market to some stretch, maybe an investment fund or whatever that invests in the stock market. That's the only way you can make a return on your savings.
Yeah.
And then what they're going to do is they're going to collapse that, and that all that money will be disappeared, and they'll just rob it from us.
Let me remind, I haven't got any
in that sort of area, but you know, the point being that a lot of people who've been forced to put their money into that are going to lose it all, and they're going to run away with a stash.
Tony Gosling is our guest, and from this coming Sunday, if you don't catch Tony's programme on Friday evenings, you can catch it this Sunday and every other Sunday at midday here. Tom on Facebook, now I never see Facebook, but Rog has alerted me to Tom's post. This is Tom Milner Gulland. How you doing, Tom? Tom is clarifying what I was saying earlier on. I didn't have the statistics to hand, but this is a fact, it isn't conjecture. Yesterday on Talk Radio, Julia Hartley Brewer made it clear that the 9 out of 10 false positives was specifically in the random testing case. In all UK tests that are being done, right, the figures we're getting are that 1.37% of them are true positives. But we are being told by the Office of National Statistics that 2.4% of them are false positives. Now, if you do the mathematics, it means that at least two-thirds of all the positives are in fact false, and that is very important. And we know about this because Desmond Swain MP brought it up in Parliament about 10 days ago. This is a fact, it's a scandal, and nobody wants to talk about it. You know, nobody is sick. Most people in the country are not carrying the antibodies of this virus, and they are gallivanting off down the road to dystopia. And I don't believe there's any way back, in my opinion, until people stand up and in their communities, forget about going online and arguing on Twitter and screaming on Facebook. People are going to have to do something. Let me say this to you. This is an astonishing thing for me. I've known you for years. And what I'm about to say to you now is in no way patronising. You, as much as anybody I've ever met, have an amazing recall of memory. You have a brilliant understanding of global networks, from Bilderberg to the Round Table groups to the Rockefeller Foundation. You are amazing. I know he's just dropped out. I hope he's not hung up. He's dropped out there. This is very important because knowing what he knows, I can't believe that Tony Gosling still believes that there's a political solution to this. There isn't a political solution to it. There couldn't be. There can't be. There never was. There never will be. Every one of them is compromised. I mean, you know what Gosling knows? What I was basically saying there,
Tony. Back again.
What I was basically saying about you was, you have a greater grasp of the global networks, the families that have brought about the world that we live in. You have. That's not blowing smoke up your arse. You're a genius. You're articulate. You understand it better than I do. I'll always be a presenter. I'll bring guys like you on because you're an amazing researcher. That's a fact. I'm not kissing your arse. Knowing what you know, how in the name of Christ and sonny Jesus, how do you still believe that there can be a political solution to this? There can't be.
Well, I didn't say that. All I'm saying is that the main enemy, we have to be absolutely clear, of the humanity right now is the pharmaceutical lobby. The banks, obviously, are 100% behind them. That we have to, I think, back any either media or government that start in whatever way stands between us and them, and they're obviously very weak. Boris looks weak. Matt Hancock is, I mean, I don't know if you saw the headline in the Evening Standard yesterday saying people don't actually believe or trust what he says anymore. Yeah. So they're basically not taking any notice of Matt Hancock. So there is some pushback from government, particularly through Rishi Sunak, and they're saying, look, we can't just collapse the economy. We're not going to do that. And
but they are doing it, they are
in certain parts of the media, particularly on talk radio you were just talking about, yeah. Which, by the way, even though they're supposed to be the biggest growing station in the country, just about 2 months ago took themselves off digital DAB radio, and they're now on only DAB Plus, which is actually quite, I don't know if you can pick it up, Richie, in Manchester, but it's quite difficult to pick up anywhere.
Yeah, you're right.
In the big cities only you can pick it up.
Yeah, so, I get them online.
There isn't much
yeah.
media pushing back, and there isn't much government pushing back. Certainly no opposition in Parliament. The Labour Party is absolutely hopeless. The SNP are hopeless. The Greens are hopeless. But there is a bit of pushback within the establishment, the media. We're talking about things like the Telegraph, the Mail, and there is a bit of a pushback from behind the scenes within the Tory Party still. But that's it. And you know, we don't have any opposition. So Boris has basically got the field clear probably for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Because of the hopeless approach of Starmer. And by the way, did you see Ruth Smith?
I saw Ruth Smith introducing Starmer today. I did indeed, yeah. Yeah.
Seeing her, who is the most pro-Israeli lobby, pro-Zionist, she's not even an MP anymore, I don't believe.
No, she isn't,
but her doing the introduction to him makes it very, very clear to everybody that the Zionist lobby now owns the Labour Party's ass, Richie.
Yeah.
There's not going to be anything happening in the Labour Party which is pro-Palestinian or anything which might threaten Israeli interests. So we're going down the US road because the US Congress and House of Representatives has been pretty much controlled by the Zionist lobby for the last 20, 30 years. That was their main target. Now they're moving to the UK to control all our politicians. So, you know, there is no opposition to this in Parliament, this whole sort of lockdown.
But you did make a good point, agenda. Tony. But you did make a very good point. And it's the captains of industry. Now, I've had Simon Dolan on this programme. You've spoken to people like him. Where are these people? Simon Dolan is off to Sweden. He's going to come back on this programme when he's back. And I want to challenge him to do more and people like him to do more and people who own restaurants and bars to do more, to disobey, to say no way, no effing way. No effing way are we kicking people out at 10 o'clock. No effing way are we going to make eating out an unbearable, unimaginably dreadful, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for here, clinical experience,
noises,
you know?
The noises have been coming from the police, that yeah. they're not interested in this. Certainly when the first initial mask-wearing edicts came down from our government, and you know, none of this discussed in Parliament, the chief of the Metropolitan Police Federation, Ken Marsh, I think it is, said that it was absurd to expect the police to police this. So I don't think there's any real enthusiasm from the police to do this sort of thing. We also heard Boris the other day saying, don't snitch on your neighbours, you know, which is a good thing to hear. And I would suggest what's going to happen here is that the police will only get involved when it's absolutely necessary. They may put out signs saying, oh, you know, please people do this or do that, otherwise you'll be fined, arrested. But when it actually comes down to it, I don't see the police being extremely active, except maybe in places like South Wales. And I can tell you, living in Bristol, the South Wales police are one of the most corrupt forces I've ever come across. So they will almost certainly be ignoring organised crime anywhere going on in the valleys and Cardiff and around that part of the country, Newport, etc., and be gleefully arresting or fining and stopping, you know, hiding behind trees in the mountains, waiting for cars to pass from England into Wales.
We saw that.
That's the sort
yeah.
of thing they will be doing
yeah.
because they're a corrupt force. But I don't think most of the other police forces in the country.
Well, you say they're corrupt now. Hang on. Let me finish.
Is South Yorkshire, Richie.
Yeah.
You know, the ones who were behind Hillsborough and the ones who, right at the very start of the lockdown in March, were chasing people up the Pennine Way.
That's right, yeah.
And it does show that some forces are much better than others. I think here in Avon and Somerset, we've got a reasonably level-headed bunch. And I don't think they're up for this. I think they're much more interested in chasing real criminals, you know.
I hope you're right on the police front. Look, I have to say, as far as corruption in South Wales police goes in Yorkshire, these police forces and their top men and women might say that they're following advice and instruction from the government. On Yorkshire, I'll give you that. It was the Yorkshire police who were asking people last year to report what they call non-violent crime, non-criminal crime, basically. You know, if I called you a name, if I said you were something, if you said you were a woman and I said you weren't, they were asking people to report that. The Times newspaper today reported that police forces in the country, not got the article here in front of me, but I do get it on my tablet, on my laptop. I do subscribe to the Times and the Telegraph as well. Story in the Times today said that police forces in the last few days have been snowed under, with people phoning them to tell them that they believe their neighbours are in breach of the rule of six. That's what they said.
Well, that's because this is a religion that they're creating, Richie. And part of the religion is you must wear the mask and you must have a go at anybody who isn't wearing a mask. And also, you are... I mean, it's very much like Nazi Germany, isn't it? At the beginnings, in the 30s. Yeah. The sort of slow creep of authoritarianism. And the idea that, you know, it's everybody's job to snitch on their neighbours and impose fines on them that they can't pay. You know, these ridiculous £10,000 fines for leaving your house, this kind of thing. So I would just point out as well, with Julian Assange and the case that's going on against him, I was looking the other day at Nazi Germany in the 30s and something popped into my mind about Assange. What did they call it? Protective custody,
yeah,
was what was imposed on the pastor Niemöller. He was a Christian priest who had been speaking out vehemently against Hitler in the 30s. And he was locked up, even though they couldn't find anything that he'd actually done wrong, for his own protection, supposedly, by the Nazi government. And this is, I think, you know, that was in 1938, just a year before the Second World War broke out. So I think we're actually in that phase now, with things like, you know, the rule of law basically breaking down and Assange being imprisoned for having broken no laws here in the UK, and under a complete pretext. We've heard, I don't know if you saw this, Richie, but there was even an imposition by the judge that they couldn't talk about, none of the witnesses for Julian Assange could mention the fact that the United States has been using torture. They weren't allowed to say it by the judge. Now, if you're not allowed to put those sorts of accusations, in fact, we know these things are true in a court of law, then what on earth is the court of law for? Of course, the answer for that is it's a judicial, effectively, assassination of, potentially anyway, of Julian Assange.
It's astonishing that Assange's representatives cannot raise the spectre of him being brutally tortured by a country that has previous, going back centuries, Guantanamo Bay, Abu Ghraib, we could be here all day long. It's a dreadful thing. It's obvious with the Assange, I mean, I feel as badly for him and for anybody else in that situation that he finds himself in. It's obvious that it's a message, isn't it? They're sending a message to everybody else who might take
exactly
materials.
Well, exactly as the Nazis were doing with Pastor Niemöller in 1938. They're saying basically, you know, there is going to be an end to freedom in this country. It's coming soon. And they're sending out a very clear message to journalists. They're sending a clear message to activists, people of faith, etc., that if you speak out against, in fact, basically this is in Assange's case, if you publish the truth about US crimes, then you're fair game. That's effectively what they're saying. And this is why it's so sinister. And I'm not absolutely sure that Assange is going to be extradited at all. I think there is also a pushback going on within the British establishment against this judge and against this crime.
I hope you're right. I can't understand why the NSA or the CIA, why didn't they just put a little bit of Novichok on Julian's door handle all those years ago. It would have been so simple, wouldn't it, to get rid of him, Novichok, eh? Oh, we could spend all day now talking about...
like they've done to several other I think I mean, one of the ones I was looking at again the other day was Robin Cook, who would almost certainly have taken over from Tony Blair instead of Gordon Brown. So that's, I think, why he was dispatched. He died in very strange circumstances, and he was an extremely brilliant orator. He would have been made a fantastic Labour Prime Minister, but he wasn't allowed to survive. And there were all sorts of questions about the way Robin Cook died. And I'd like to see more questions asked about various figures in the UK and how they disappeared off the scene when they started challenging the establishment, not least of which, of course, is Princess Diana.
Absolutely. We could talk about David Kelly as well. It irks me, it irks me, and I'm sure it irks you every time one of our news channels decides to take on the Russians and the alleged habit of the Russian government of bumping off people it doesn't like. You've just named a half a dozen people there bumped off by the intelligence agencies of this country. It's staggering stuff. We've got about 3 minutes left. First of all, thanks for coming on short notice today. I appreciate you doing that. You're a great sport.
Anytime.
And second of all, I'm looking forward to... I mean, I listen to your show anyway, as you well know. I'm looking forward to rebroadcasting that, to put it on again, to repeat it effectively after you've uploaded it on the Friday. It'll go out here on Sundays at noon from now on. And I asked Tony,
Richie, with that is a sort of almost like After Dark, because I've been booted. I had a 2-hour slot on FM here because I was taken off of that. Before we get back on FM again, what I'm doing is I'm just saying, well, we're going to just keep going until we run out of stories. So it's a bit like After Dark used to be on Channel 4, except not going on until 1 a.m.
Brilliant. No, it's terrific, mate. You've been a tremendous help to me over the years. I meant what I said about your knowledge of how we got to hear Bilderberg,
yeah, we
of course.
We haven't even mentioned the Bilderbergers, have we?
Because
I think this is, you look at what's going on. This is a supranational body. These are the sorts of people who have, you know, the pharmaceutical industry right in there, the banks right in there, European aristocracy, very interesting. I mean, I can remember bumping into some women who'd been involved in this CRISPR genetic engineering technology, the stuff which is being now rolled out as one of the, or in fact, there's 3 or 4 of the potential vaccines for COVID-19, big inverted commas, being part of that technology. This is this gene altering. These are the transhumanists, basically, the Bilderbergers. And, you know, there's been very little focus on them. But it's that nexus, I think, which has been pushing this whole thing. Gates, of course, is very close to that lot. And
I'll tell you what, T.
I think through the World Health Organization.
I'll tell you what, T. It would be worth looking over the Bilderberg attendees of the last 3 to 4 years. It might give you a picture as to what's happening at the moment in terms of the players involved.
Oh, I think it would, because they're effectively a kind of Western world government behind the scenes. They're like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, you know. These are immensely powerful, far more powerful than our elected government because of the financial clout they have. And I think, you know, it's been good to see that over the last 20 years or so, there's been a bit more awareness of them. But certainly when I was started looking into them in the mid-1990s, there was very little. And some of the stuff, most of the stuff that there was in the mid-90s was actually really quite... And, you know, there was anti-Semitic flavour to it, which was, I think, completely unnecessary, particularly since Rockefeller wasn't Jewish. And then, you know, a very nasty side to it. So I did my best, I think, to try and extract that from it. But I know I was having a chat a couple of years ago with a guy called Andrei Vilcek, a journalist who was announced this morning died. I mean, he was only in his mid-late 50s, and he's a guy who, I mean, he's someone I got to know quite well and had on my show many times. He was born in Russia, but became an American citizen. And he's been doing reports again and again, and he's done several really good books about the diabolical nature of the Western NATO empires. But he was unfortunately found dead in his car this morning in Istanbul. It possibly could have been yesterday morning if I got that the dates wrong, but it was reported in the Turkish newspapers that Andrei is no more, sadly. I mean, he's been a fantastic filmmaker over the years. And if anyone's never seen his stuff... I think, you know, he'd be a really good person for people to just look at. I noticed that he did a really good piece on Press TV just earlier, just the end of last week, about what's going on in Belarus, explaining, right. You know, that what they're trying to do there is what worked in Ukraine. They're trying to do it in Belarus. And I think many of us watching can see that's exactly what they're trying to do.
The modus operandi.
In the middle of the town.
Yeah.
And then have a coup. That's what they're trying to do, but I don't think it's going to work. It seems to me very similar to what's been happening in Venezuela. But I just thought it'd be nice to pay tribute to Andre.
Well, Bulton, fair play to you, mate.
Decades of great work.
I'll be putting out links, of course, later on this evening to where people can find you on Fridays, but it'll be repeated here on Sundays from now on in at midday. Off to Australia next for us today. Tony, thanks again for jumping in, mate, today. I really appreciate it. Love having you on. We'll do Bilderberg next time you're on, which will be real soon, hopefully. Cheers
yeah,
again.
The other thing it'd be lovely to do at some point, Rich, is to go through my little thing I wrote in the 90s, which is a look at the Book of Revelation and some biblical things.
Because we keep saying we'll do
what's
that.
Going
yeah,
on
we've
at the
got
moment,
to do that.
I mean, as I see it, we had a 9/11 which was aimed at foreign policy and abroad. Now, this whole COVID operation seems to be aimed not by the government, but by the Bilderbergers, the banksters, and the usual suspects in the deep state against us. Against
and a lot of my listeners will want to hear that. It's come up quite a bit. Great friends of mine, very interested in the metaphysical aspect of all of this, the spiritual aspect of it. So let's do that real soon. Got to go to Australia, though, because my next guest has done me the favour of getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to speak to me. So, well, Tony, thanks again, mate.
I think I better shuffle off the stage, Richie.
Shuffle off the stage. Cheers, mate. You too. Always a pleasure. Tony Gosling, live there from Bristol City. Top man. The Politics Show, of course, sadly not doing that anymore on BCFM, but doing a great show every Friday. Tell you more about that a bit later on. And, of course, as I said, it'll be on this channel on Sundays at noon after I depart Sunday View. Max Egan is live in Brisbane in a few minutes' time. He's on standby there. He's gotten up out of the feathers. Yeah, really early for us. I'm glad he has. Lots to talk about with him, too. Back in 2 minutes. Right, you never cut a song as short as that if you're beginning your radio career. If you're a fledgling, never do it. But I'm cutting it short because my next guest, who's no stranger to you whatsoever, I'm not going to give him a big preamble introduction. You know who he is. He's done me a big favour today and he's gotten out of bed on Wednesday morning, crack of dawn over there in Brisbane. Huge pleasure to welcome back after a while. It's been a while. About time he came back on the programme, our old friend Max Egan. Thanks for coming back, my friend. How are you?
Good to be here, Richie. Thanks for having me on, brother.
You've been in the wars, mate. As far as the old censorship goes, and my God, you spend years making great films, challenging narratives on so many different issues. You do a great job with them technically, beautiful stuff. You put it on YouTube, you gain hundreds of thousands of subscribers. Then they start deleting videos at the rate of knots and they start deleting channels. Now, I know you're not in any way narcissistic. It's not about you. It's about the information. But are we now in the place that we feared we would eventually land?
We're pretty well there, Richie. The door's just swinging shut. It's outrageous what's happening here in Australia. And yeah, they deleted all my stuff from YouTube, like 13 years' work. No warning at all. They just deleted 3 channels. And that's the way it goes. Black banned from Facebook as well and kicked off Spotify, kicked off iTunes. So yeah, it's getting more and more difficult to get the word out, and they don't want the word getting out because we are in that place. I mean, what's happening here in Australia, in Victoria? I mean, Victoria went from what they described as one of the world's most livable cities to 1984 in record time. And the new legislation that Daniel Andrews wants to introduce, the omnibus legislation, is basically giving carte blanche powers to anybody to do anything they want. I mean, they can just detain people at their whim. They can appoint officers. Anybody they pick, they can just appoint as an officer given the powers of the police. And they can detain people and they can review the detention every 24 hours, basically keep you as long as they want. And you don't have any legal recourse, all under the guise of keeping people safe from this terrible pandemic. And I'd like to know where he's getting his data from, because you know there just isn't a pandemic. But it's absolutely horrendous. We haven't seen legislation like the Omnibus Act that Dan Andrews wants to introduce nowhere ever in the world before. You haven't seen this type of legislation in peacetime or even in wartime. You haven't seen this type of draconian legislation. So it's over the top, mate. It's really, really over the top. And it's coming to a town near you. I mean, if you couple what Daniel Andrews is doing in Victoria, have a look at the health passports they're bringing in Ireland. Have a look at the rule of six they're bringing in London now. And you've got talk in the United States where people are saying, oh, look, Australia is really leading the way. They've shown the world how to do it because they've got on top of the virus and it's their lockdown. So they're going to try to, yeah, I guarantee they'll probably declare Victoria almost virus-free within the next couple of months, and then everyone will see how wonderful it worked and how you know, Daniel Andrews' ruthless method saved the state, and everyone will need to adopt this method. I mean, they'll find some way to bring it out to the West, but it isn't just here that it's happening. It's happening right around the world, and they're just trialing the extreme version of it, I think, in Victoria at the moment. Horrendous.
Now, Daniel Andrews, he is mooting, basically deputising members of the public to detain people, if necessary, who are in breach of whatever COVID guidelines they might be in breach of. Is that right?
Mm. Pretty well. That's what he's got in the in his new omnibus legislation.
Like the COVID marshal.
Do that. Just appoint whatever officers they want, you know. It's outrageous, Richie. It's absolutely outrageous. Separate people from their families, all sorts of stuff. Take you off to quarantine centres. New rules that if you're a conspiracy theorist in Victoria, you may be seen as negligent, spreading information that could damage public health, and they may have to take you and your family to a quarantine centre. It's just blackbagging people and taking them to the gulags, mate.
We grew up in Ireland with this image of Australia as being a very kind of liberal place, you know, where people had a very laid-back, a big melting pot of a country, obviously, where people had a very laid-back attitude. There was a general suspicion of, you know, rules and regulations and big government, and it would be a very easygoing place to be. Wow. Wow. Because what I see at the moment is, just to endorse what you said, I see a country, obviously it's divided into some very big states, which is, you know, making places like Ireland and Greater Manchester, making us look like holiday camps, Max, by comparison.
Oh, it is. It's outrageous. I mean, it's not so bad here where I live, but there's an election next month. And I'd say after the election, we'll see it come to Queensland as well. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I think the Premier of Queensland is doing what she can to try to get herself back in power. But we've got border restrictions everywhere. You can't even cross the border, which is a couple of miles from my home. We've been driving down there for my whole life. No, not allowed across the border. Got to get your papers, please. Please show your papers. Why are you coming to New South Wales? What is your purpose?
You're a papierin bitter, huh?
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, man, in Australia. And you know, after all these months, it's ridiculous. I really want to know where the guy's getting his data from. I mean, he's gone mad. Daniel Andrews has gone completely mad. And all the premiers are the same. I mean, they're all pushing this whole agenda. And it's about this whole Chinese social crediting system they want to bring out. So they've got to find a way of bringing this into the West, Richie. What's the backstory? Well, Daniel Andrews has always sold the place out to China. He's given a doorway for the Chinese Belt and Road system to come into Australia. And so it's a Chinese takeover. You know, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and all these people at the top, the banksters who run the whole show, they've been totally on board with China for years. I mean, China's a big commercial capitalist venture now. For a communist country, it's more capitalist than anything, you know what I mean? Like, capitalism in China in the last 20, 30 years, it's just gone forward in leaps and bounds phenomenally. So it's a kind of a blend between the two. But they've been incubating that system in China for a lot of years. They've got to find a way of bringing it out into the West. So how can they do that? So they create this economic backstory, the Belt and Road, Daniel Andrews in debt to China, selling all Victoria's assets, rah-rah. It's all one system at the top. It's like they say in the movie Network, you know, there are no countries. It's just a business. The whole world is a business. You can think of the countries as different franchises of the stock that they're controlling, and we are the stock. We're the livestock, you know. And so they've got to find a way of bringing this out into the world. And like I said, when you couple this with the health passport that they're bringing in Ireland, you know, and what they're doing with the 5G and the whole social credit thing that they're doing in Victoria, it's all the same system, Richie. And part of it, they've got to, in order to get it into the United States at all, they've got to completely obliterate the United States, which is why they're destroying the food chain so dramatically in the United States and everywhere else.
How are they doing that? Talk about that. The food chain is important. And when I said you were coming on today, I was asked to broach that subject with you. Why should we be paying attention to the global food chain, and particularly in the West, why should we be paying attention to it now?
Because it's breaking down. Look, this is something that I called back in 2008 when I did a film called The Big Picture, and I said the international interdependency, the codependency being set up between nations is a setup. We're being set up for a fall. All they have to do is break the supply chain, stop international shipping or international flights, and we're all going to be stranded. Nobody's going to have any life skills left because all of those things would have changed in the last 20 yeah. years. You know, people, the focus has shifted. People aren't being taught things in school. You get young girls coming out through school, they've got no idea how to get the basic ingredients and make a cake or a loaf of bread or a meal or something, you know. They need to get a can of this and a packet of that and a this of that. You know, they can't just make it from scratch. And it's the same with a lot of guys. They can't just make things from scratch anymore. They got to go and, you know, buy all the pre-made stuff. And we've lost a lot of life skills, and it's the same with the food chain. We're just used to, you know, no one can – I don't even know kids that don't even know how to go and plant a seed. I mean, it's pretty simple to plant a seed in yeah. the ground and put some water on it and get it to grow, and they don't know how to do it. They literally need instructions on how to grow a vegetable, you know. So it's important. It's extremely important. And when Trump canceled the flights between Europe and America back in March, I called it right then. I said, okay, here we are. This is the breakdown of the supply chain. And you're going to have massive food shortages. And when you look at the history of the world, look at Bolshevism, look at how they've depopulated major areas of the earth previous in history, it's always been through starvation. It's the tried and true method.
Can I ask you a question,
In 1973,
Max? Sorry,
1973 or 1974, Kissinger said, we will use food as a weapon. Yeah. What do people think he meant by that?
Against who? Can I ask a question on that now? It's great to be hearing you talk about this. It's something I've not looked into very much. So when you talked about the interdependency of countries when it came to food and the movement of food, so somewhere along the line then, there was an agenda for countries to stop basically producing certain things and certain foods to make them dependent on other countries, because later on it would be easy to interfere with that. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And it yeah. isn't just food, it's production as well. I mean, how many Steel. Vehicles does the yeah. United States make anymore? How much farm equipment does England make? How much yeah. stuff do you do? How many countries can actually survive on their own without importing half of the stuff they use and eat from other countries now?
You know, some people will listen to this and they'll say, ah, that's just nationalistic, jingoistic stuff now from Max. You know, that sounds like a very nationalistic argument. It makes sense that, you know, as time goes by, as the world evolves, it makes sense that, I don't know, companies who manufacture food products, it makes sense that they would buy certain ingredients from other parts of the world if they could get them cheaper, and that would obviously have an impact on those ingredients being sourced in their own country, in their own country of origin. Do you know what I'm saying? So people, I'm not saying I disagree with you now, I'm just saying people will say, oh, this is just more nationalistic stuff, you know, that we should grow everything for ourselves, but it's not always feasible. It makes sense sometimes to go overseas and buy steel from China.
Well, it does, but the thing is, you know, it's the economic dependence that has created that need. Even,
yeah.
you know, it's a really difficult thing for people to get money out of the equation. You know, money out of their head and think, oh, it's economically viable to do that. Well, what is economics? Forget the economics. You know, we're just people. We just do things that people do. All of this economic dependency and economic, you know, the money system is there to provide scarcity to people, to provide the excuse to, yeah, okay, we will. Let the guys in this country screw their business because we can get cheaper overseas. But then eventually you get to the point, well, that now doesn't exist in your country. So when that supply chain's broken down and you can't get overseas, where do you get that product anymore? You know, and you haven't supported this guy, so no one in your country knows how to do that anymore. So after a series yeah. of, you know, a generation, the every country has lost their life skills and they're all dependent on big corporate entities, which means they're very easy to control. And it's all been done through the imposition of the economic system over people's consciousness, the fact that they actually believe they need to pay to be alive. You know, it's such a scam, Richie.
And while that's going on, of course, then biotech companies were allowed kind of ride roughshod over many countries around the world, particularly third world countries, and forced their horrible self-destructing seeds on them, weren't they? Those Terminator seeds and all of this. Of course, that must play into that agenda as well. TheCrowHouse.com is where you'll find Max Egan. Max wasn't... The last time Max was on was much earlier this year. He hasn't been on since the shutdown, so it's important to get his take on this. He's had a lot of very severe and serious censorship of late. He's not the only one, but he's here now. Three channels deleted without any warning by YouTube. I've been looking at Max Egan's videos for many years. If I said that I agreed with everything I ever saw in Max Egan's videos, I'd be a liar. But there was never anything libelous on his videos. There was never anything harmful on his videos. His work was basically taking a bunch of facts and geopolitical events and making analysis of those geopolitical events and offering opinions, educated opinions. Nothing wrong with them. I've been in broadcasting for over 20 years. It's a disgrace that this has been happening. People can find you, we're going to be here till the top of the hour, of course, but of course people can find you on other platforms now where those accounts are growing again at the speed of light, right? You're on BitChute. I believe you're on Brand New Tube as well and other places.
Yeah, BitChute, Brand New Tube, LBRY, 3Speak. I'm going to try to get onto DTube. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult since YouTube's been shut. I mean, since something kicked off YouTube. But, I mean, YouTube's sort of going the way of the dodo, same as Facebook. It's becoming like a new MySpace. I don't think too many people are even going there anymore. Something you touched on before when you said biotech. Excuse me, COVID. But
go on.
Something you touched on before when you said biotech, looking at the whole biological situation that we're in here with the vaccine they want to bring in, which is going to modify your DNA. It's a particular type of RNA DNA vaccine, which is going to modify your DNA. And you look at what they're doing with the testing, why they are so intent on testing. Because when you look at the PCR tests, they cannot test for infection. They're designed to simply amplify a genetic environment. You can pick whatever you want. I posted an interview that I had with Kerry Mullis on one of my recent reports where he's saying, look, it's difficult to find, you know, one molecule, a molecule of anything you're likely to have in your body. You can find at least one molecule of just about anything in anybody. And all you have to do is amplify that with PCR and get it to you got enough there to be able to work with. And you can make any claim you want. So it's being misrepresented. The tests are being misrepresented. And really, when you look at what China has done, about 6 months ago or 7 months ago, there was a report saying China is breaching all these human rights things by this DNA database it's gathering. It's a genomic profiling that they're doing. So they can basically weed out dissidents, okay, by genomically profiling people, pre-crime, you know. Gather their DNA, genomically profile them, and then they can predict what they're going to do. Tie it all together with their social media, you know, their Facebook posts and all the biometric data that they gather on everybody in China now, and they're getting a pretty good genomic database of everybody. You look at the PCR tests that most people are doing, a lot of them come from China. Most of the tests that are being conducted with people here all come from China. This is genomic profiling. That's why they want everyone to be tested. Go and get tested. They're really urging people to get tested. You know, and it's a PCR test. It can't test for anything. They can claim you're positive for whatever they want to call it for. So what are they really doing with it? They're doing genomic profiling. That's what it's all about, Richard. They want to bring us into the mainframe, but they want to know who the dissidents are, who the real people are, where the non-playing characters are, and where the real thoughtful people are.
Help me out here now.
When you look at the RNA DNA vaccine, it's actually attacking chromosome 8, which is part of our intelligence sector in our brain. If you look at the coding for what they're looking for with the PCR test, it's actually chromosome 8, which is freaky stuff. I mean, this is a massive genetic manipulation of people, all done through mind control, through this belief that this virus is real when there's no proof that it even exists.
And people do, don't they? I mean, I've seen it here in my own community. People have fallen for it, hook, line and sinker. I don't want to be pessimistic, but they have. Max Egan is our guest. I'll tell you where I'd like to take this, but you don't have to go there. I'm going to give you the run of the rest of the hour because you've not been on for ages. But one of the questions I think, I feel moving beyond what you've said there about the RNA DNA vaccine. I've had very distinguished doctors tell me that on this program. It's going to change human beings into some sort of hybrid. There's no doubt about that. All of these things. One of the things you've gotten into over the years, and I think it's a brave thing, really, because you've got a very forensic way of analysing when you analyse events, but you've taken it to another level, which always places you in the region of ridicule. I don't mean that you're ridiculed, but people ridicule. When you start going into the metaphysical and the spiritual, people find it easier then to attack people like you and others like you. I'm more open-minded than I ever was, and I was open-minded anyway. What's going on? I look at these people, the people that are running this. You mentioned Andrews. You mentioned Andrews. Let's talk about Boris Johnson, Emmanuel Macron, Merkel in Germany. I don't believe that those people are behind this agenda. I believe this is basic 101 stuff. They're just managers of public life. They roll it out. What is really behind it? Is there any truth? You know, a lot of learned men and women have said to me that they think that this is some battle between good and evil, and that there is some metaphysical aspect to this that I've maybe been reluctant to acknowledge over the years, describing myself as agnostic as I do. How do you even begin to answer that, Max? What is really going on?
I think there is it's a spiritual battle more than anything. I mean, I think we're getting to the moment where we're about to be tested, Richie. And it's whether you can face infinity without flinching. You know, when you look at this life is a temporary experience. That vessel that you inhabit, it's a temporary experience. And the one part about life, the given about coming here, is that you're going to exit the realm one day. You're going to die. Yeah, and how much are you prepared to forego your life and to be squashed in a box and to be, you know, turned into a slave in order to avoid that part of life which is inevitable? You'll allow yourself to be repressed and repressed and repressed and squashed and squashed and squashed further and further and further in order to avoid being hurt, in order to avoid exiting the realm. You're so scared of exiting the realm, you'll become more and more and more of a prisoner in order to prevent yourself ever leaving the prison. You know what I'm saying? That's the kind of the mentality of people, because this world is a prison. It may be beautiful. It may be wonderful. I have a beautiful place here, trees in the yard, peacocks in the yard, beautiful creek out the front. But when I leave this place and I go out into the world, I've got to walk between the lines. I've got to pay to be alive. I'm controlled and surveilled and monitored every step of the way, same as everybody else. You're living in a prison. You know, so, and we do everything we can to avoid leaving this prison. And I think that's part of the test. You know, will you allow yourself to be led into the mainframe? So scared of death that you'll take the vaccine, you'll take the chip because you want this promise of eternal life that you're going to give you in the mainframe. When you're just there in a mainframe, you'll be a slave forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. You may not even be able to die in that position. You know, I think this is just a test. I think life is just a test. I think this is the exam before the main event, and it's how you choose to be and how you choose to stand. Are you prepared to stand in your truth? Or are you prepared to just do whatever you're told because you're so scared of exiting the realm because you've been taught to be afraid of death?
Why is life a prison? Let's stay with that for a minute. Go ahead.
Well, it's look what you've got to do when you go outside, Richie. I mean, you've got to pay to be alive. When I was 4 years old and I found out we had to buy land, I was horrified. I couldn't understand why anyone would have to pay simply to live on this earth. I couldn't understand the fact that if my father and my mother didn't work and they weren't away from me all day off doing all these things, then we wouldn't have a house to live in. I couldn't understand that at all. That itself is slavery. Just being separated from the abundance of the earth through this barrier of finance, like we were saying before, the economic model, which allows all of this stuff to happen because it's about balancing the books. You know, you can allow the world to be destroyed, and if as long as the books are balanced, it's all good. And we're in a situation now where the people who are running this world, they're so caught in that economic system that they will continue to destroy the earth until it turns into something that looks like the moon, and then they'll be going to look for another planet to exploit because they're saying, well, it's no good here anymore, and I have to go find another planet because I still owe money to the bank. That's the mentality, you know? It's incredible. So, I mean, it's a prison. It's a prison system. Just the fact that we cannot ever express ourselves the way we should and the way we want to. We may be able to within the comfort of our own home, but as soon as you step outside those walls, you're surveilled, you're watched, you've got people. Even the neighbors will look on you, and it's getting more and more this snitch culture. You know, the whole world of brown shirts we're turning into through this COVID thing, you know. So it's becoming even more and more of a prison. And when you look at all the COVID guidelines that they're putting in place, the social distancing, the mask, these are all prison things.
Prison
these
things
they do in the exercise yard in prison.
Isn't that
turning
amazing,
the whole world into a prison? And even look at the Stanford University experiment where they gave the cops unlimited power, and have a look at what's happening in Victoria. Have a look at what's happening there. This is next level stuff, Richie. It's a prison, and people just don't admit it because it's such a pretty prison.
It is one that we choose to be in, though. We make a conscious decision to participate in it, don't we? We must do on some level.
We do. I think we do. I think we choose to come down here to participate in this realm of duality. You know, I think if you really look at consciousness and put it on a universal level, you know, there's really only one of us here, and we come from a place of unconditional universal love. That's all it is. When you're back in that source, that's all it is. But that would become a little mundane after a while. You might want to do something. So we come down here to experience duality, where you can experience yourself. We can actually communicate with ourself. We can do all sorts of incredible things here. You can't do that if you come, you know, if you don't have physical form. So yeah, I think we come here almost as a form of soul purification, you know.
Here's a question which is very good. It comes in from my friend and confidant, Jean Anne. It's a good question. The elite that are obsessed with transhumanism, which is it? Are they obsessed with transhumanism because they're scared of dying, or is it because they want to live forever? Those things are not necessarily the same. Which is it, do you think?
I think they want to control us. I think that's what the whole... If you could think of this as a game arena, look, imagine if you're playing a virtual game and you've got real consciousness, real people out there playing it, but you can find some way of trapping them within the game so that then you control them and you own them all, and it's your little flock in your god then, you know, in your game arena. Kind of like that sort of a thing. I mean, I think a lot of this is being happening from external to this realm. I think the real controllers may not even exist in this physical realm that we live in. I mean, that's getting into really esoteric stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But it's good, though. It's very important.
It's almost like, if you can, you ever see the film Gamer?
No.
Where there was a guy, and that actually had people in these game arenas, and they were being operated from people outside the game arenas, and there's nothing they could do about it.
Right.
Even the thoughts they were having, they didn't know whether they were their own thoughts or whatever. It's almost like that. It's almost like this is an avatar, and there's an operator that exists outside the realm. You know, and it's like a war game that's going on here. It's like a battle that's going on here. And, I think there's far, far more to this than what people would believe. And I think that fear is the reason for it all. Fear is the reason we do any of it, Richie. Fear is the reason we do what we're told all the time. Fear is the reason we haven't turned this into a better world instantly, because we could. We could turn it into a better world in a day if people would just drop the fear and realize that they actually have personal value, you know.
You told me one time, and it was something you were looking into. You took a bit of criticism for it, which is fair enough. You've got thick skin, you don't care. But you were looking into the idea that there was a land. Now, I've done some notes before you came on today. I obviously would do some notes for every guest, but I didn't. I should have looked back to the interview. It wasn't Tartaria. I can't remember the name of the place, but you believe that there was a civilization at one time on planet Earth, which was utopian. Is that right?
Well, I don't know whether it's utopia, but I believe there was a civilization on Earth that was a worldwide civilization that actually got along with itself. I don't think there were wars. I don't know if it would be utopia. I don't know if with the complexities of the human consciousness, I don't know that we could ever have any type of utopian reality where we're just too different. We're always going to be arguing about something.
It's a brilliant show, that, Max. It's a brilliant show, and it's a shame that those videos were deleted from YouTube. I could find them on the other channels, and I will do, because I really enjoyed that show. And the comments that came in afterwards, in fact, that interview I did with you, I think it would be a lot for me now, because most of my listeners, they listen live or they get it on iTunes. But that particular conversation I had with you, it was viewed about 200,000 times on YouTube. And people were fascinated by it. And about half the comments said, Max is a bit of an idiot. And about half of them said, this is brilliant. And there is historic evidence. There's architectural evidence that there was a time, where things were good and there were no wars and people got on. There was no hunger, there was no starvation. And some people believe that the interference with that might have been non-human. It might have come from somewhere else, either interdimensional or from out there, as it were. I don't want to waste our time on this or your time, but it just fascinates me at this time, this juncture we're in now, that there may have been a time when we were even more advanced than we are now, and there was no pain, no hunger, no famine, no war, no madness, no social crediting, no ugliness. You know, I'm fascinated by that. And you've done some brilliant stuff on it. You didn't commit to it, yeah, you just looked into it.
I think there is a very, very good likelihood that that's what happened. I really do. I mean, there's so much evidence of a worldwide culture that existed here. And really, when you start looking into free energy devices and ancient architecture, and yeah, I think we lived in a far, far different world with much more advanced technology than we've got now. I think the evidence for it is absolutely everywhere. Now, people are just constrained by what they read in history books. And the education system, it's been a gradual dumbing down. Even now what the kids are taught in school is nothing like what I was taught, which was nothing like what my parents were taught. So, you know, we've lost all this knowledge. But, yeah, I think we lived in a much better culture and a much more unified culture than what we have today. Whether it was utopia, like I say, with human consciousness, I mean, I don't know if we could ever have that. But, you know, certainly something that would appear utopian in comparison
to this. That's right. Anything would. Max Egan is our guest. For decades now, Max has been writing and broadcasting, providing an alternative take on the big geopolitical events of the day, whichever day it was. Like I said, he's been doing it for years and very successfully. And I know many of our listeners, it's only been 10 years, really, 11 years since I left mainstream radio to begin speaking to people like you, and you've been walking this road for years and years and years. And yet I still detect, and we'll come to it in a minute, this ray of optimism in you. But I just want to say something, and it kills me to say this. When I was broadcasting in Spain years ago, I got to know a gentleman who's still hale and hearty today called Peter Ind. He's a double bass player, very famous jazz double bassist, an amazing guy, great guy. And Peter came into the studios in Spain. You know Spain very well. You know that part of Spain very well. You've got friends there, good friends there, of course, near Marbella. We're talking about San Pedro, of course, Max. And I used to broadcast there. And a man, excuse me, who looked like Santa Claus, knocked on the door one night. He was in his early 80s. And he said, "Richie, I'm Peter Ind, and I demand to be interviewed." And he was lovely. And I said, "Come in then." And he spent, as much as he was a great bass player and still is and producer, he did a life's study of the work of Wilhelm Reich, the great psychoanalyst. And Peter is convinced that Reich was doing work that would have been world transforming in terms of, you know, you mentioned it, free energy, you know, healing, an amazing man. And he sat with me for 2 hours in a radio studio, and those interviews are not around anymore. Nobody has them. They were deleted. And so even in recent history, even in the last few decades, people have been destroyed, Max. They've been discredited because they've been able to figure out, you know, free energy, interdimensional stuff. And Reich is a great example, isn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, so many people have been, their work's been completely destroyed. Look at Royal Raymond Rife with the work that he did back in the 30s and 40s or even the 20s and 30s. I mean, they had a dinner, I think, in 1935 where they celebrated the end of all disease because Rife had cured everything with frequency, sound and frequency. So all this technology squashed, you know, and some of the stuff that Wilhelm Reich did was incredible, absolutely amazing stuff. And there is a whole different reality. You know, we are constrained by our belief of scientific parameters. You know, what we learn at school has got to fit within this little box and nothing outside that is acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, we don't ever bring metaphysics into it. Even when you look at the double slit experiment, the fact that observation affects an experiment. I mean, it's got to be so obvious to people that there's more going on here. You know, your mind is an incredibly powerful thing. And the electromagnetic force that we all generate is an incredibly powerful thing. You know, I think that's what even creates this holographic world that we live in, which I refer to as holographic because I could find more evidence that it's a hologram than anything else. You know, irrespective of what the shape is. I mean, the shape will be anything that the collective consciousness believes it to be. That's what it'll project. It can be anything. So that's irrelevant. What is relevant is what you do with on your path through this realm and what the energetic state is that you're in. You know, and I don't think we'll ever reach those type of heights and things that Wilhelm Reich and all these people talked about while we still maintain this level of fear in our psyche. And everything about this system is designed to make fear. Even the economic system itself is designed to create fear. It's that constant drip of potential scarcity going on in the back of your mind, like a tap dripping in the corner. You may not be able to pay the rent, got to get the bills, got to get this electricity bills coming, or got to prepare for the future, you know. All this stuff that we're given, we live in our mind all the time. Most people live constantly in their mind. They're in a state of either stress about what happened in the past or fear about what's going to happen in the future. They're never in the now. They're never in the moment. So they're never really living their lives. They're living in their mind.
Yeah.
So all you've got to do is control that information, and you can control reality, and that's how it works. You know, so it's been insidious what they've done to us. And, you know, when you look back through history and you see the depopulations that they've done, like we seem to have these pandemics every 100 years. How incredible is that? It's just so coincidental. 1620, 1720, 1820, 1920, 2020. We have these pandemics, huge population cull, and we come back a little bit dumber than we did the time before because of all the information, all the life skills that are lost. I think they go through in these periods. That's why it's such a threat to the old people, because they want to kill off all the old
people. Of course
they
do. Because
they don't want that knowledge being passed on to the young people coming through, you know.
One of the worst songs of all time, "All the Young Dudes Carry the News." What bollocks that is. All of the information and the experience is in our senior citizens, isn't it, Max? Of course they want to kill him off. Of course they want to put "do not resuscitate" notices at the end of their beds in hospital. These are scandalous, ugly, horrible things to be dealing with. By the way, what you said there about staying in the now and living in the present, there's a couple of people in particular I hope are paying attention to what Max Egan is saying, and they are people whom have, you know, gotten trapped in the past and worrying about the future. Stay in the now. Thecrowhouse.com, Max Egan, as I said, a long time on the road, as gentle, as decent, as loquacious, as interesting a guy as I've ever spoken to on this radio programme. I said a minute ago about optimism. You are optimistic, aren't you? I know we've been talking about stuff that's not nice. It's maybe it's even low vibrational. Maybe it might even have a negative effect on a listener, what we're talking about. But you're coming at it from an educational point of view, hoping that people will take some sort of step. Do you see evidence? Do you believe that there may be some pushback, and that ultimately, when all is said and done and when the dust is settled, righteousness will prevail? Is that how you feel?
Well, I can hope that. I'm not going to count on it, but I can certainly hope for it. I mean, I think a lot of what they're doing is out of fear. I think a lot of people are waking up. I mean, they've virtually red-pilled most of the world with this. There's so many people have figured out that it's a scam. Even though there are a lot that are going along with it, I mean, there's always going to be hope, Richie. But you've got to be prepared to have a plan B as well, and realize a lot of people may not get it. You know, a lot of people may actually lead us into this, but it's not really about that anyway. Like I said, if you can look at it as a form of soul purification, it's okay for a lot of people to get led into the mainframe, because If you were a divine being and you wanted to purify yourself or whatever, you wanted to get rid of the garbage, well, how would you do it? I mean, you could create a situation like this. If it is a universal consciousness and there is any such a thing as ascension or heaven or anything like that, wouldn't you want to get rid of the negative stuff? Wouldn't you want to get rid of the stuff that didn't work? And maybe this is a way of doing it. You know, if all those people, all those sleeping masses go off and join the mainframe and become zombies and go off and do something else, well, maybe it'll leave the world free for us. I mean, you know, maybe we can have a better world. There's all sorts of different ways of looking at it. But I don't think they're going to get away with what they're doing. I really don't. I think the human spirit is too powerful. And there may be some that get led into that, but that will just leave the rest of the human spirit far more powerful and far more pure than what it was, with all of that, all those NPCs removed or whatever. I mean, I have no stake in any of this. I can do what I can to encourage people to stand up for themselves in the hope that more souls are saved. But, you know, ultimately it's up to them. And it's got to the point now where, you know, I've been screaming out for years, 10, 12, 20 years, you know, 12 or 13 years on the radio show, and 20, 30 years of my life I've been screaming out about this sort of stuff. So it gets to a point where I've just got to face the writing on the wall and realize that a lot of people aren't going to get it. And it isn't my responsibility or your responsibility to save them. You know, information is out there, and ignorance is a choice these days. So, you know, if people haven't got it by this stage, well, you know, you can't just keep screaming at the wall hoping that they'll do. They get to a point where you've got to reach that point of serenity, and you've got to be prepared to face infinity without flinching.
I love that.
And I think we're getting to that point, you know.
I love that. Face infinity without flinching, because this is only the beginning, of course. And that's something I believe, whatever it looks like after this physical, well, it isn't physical, of course, we think it's physical, but after this particular juncture, whatever it looks like, I don't know, but I do know that this isn't the end. And I kind of share your point of view on that. I've been asked to ask you, again, this sounds like a negative question, but it's not meant to, but I've been asked to ask you, have you felt, you mentioned vibration, you mentioned electromagnetic frequencies, which of course can be very, very positive and very, very negative. Have you experienced outside interference, not necessarily against you, your show, your equipment, your videos, but against your being? Have you ever felt that your physical self was being attacked by some of these exotic methods they use these days to try and put people off their game?
Oh, absolutely. I had a severe electromagnetic attack in February this year. You probably are aware of that, Richie.
Yeah.
I had a severe, I got hit by something. I think the technology they use is called looking glass. I've been looking into this, and I thought it might have been voice of God technology, but I think it was called looking glass, what they used on me. I was making a big difference for the Australian fires. A lot of people were listening to me. And I got attacked by some sort of electromagnetic weapon. Then there was a hit piece in the newspaper about me. And then I got attacked by troll farms. There were plagiarism claims made against me, all within a matter of about 3 or 4 days.
I remember.
I got like this 4 or 5 prong attack while I was having this complete psychic meltdown from this EM attack that I suffered. While I was literally lying in my bed at 1 o'clock in the morning, they hit me with something. And I ended up all night and up all the next night, and it was just crazy times. So yeah, I mean, but that's the only type of interference I've ever had. Never any sort of physical harm being done to me. Well, I did get beaten up once after a talk, but that's different. That's just a disgruntled punter in the crowd who didn't like what I was saying about Israel, so they came and laid a few boots in my ribs after the show.
Yeah, I remember that, but as well. Yeah. But on the fires, just in case, because again, there are people listening to this for the first time, and despite your career and how successful you've been in terms of the YouTube channel and the website, there will be people who haven't. This will be the first time they will have heard you. It might be the first time they've ever heard me as well. And what Max is saying there, they might expect me to challenge that, you see. When he said that he was getting shit nationally in the press in Australia because he was making videos about the fires in Australia, that is all true. He was. There was a very serious attack on him from all those angles. So if he tells me that he believes that there was a physical attack on him using the sort of technology and weapons we know they have, I'm prepared to take his word for it. I mean, I don't know that it happened, but I believe that Max believes it happened, and I know that they do have these weapons. Listen, only recently they've been using them, haven't they? Didn't they use them against anti-Trump protesters, some of these weapons, these heat devices?
I think they did as well. I think they did. I mean, they also tested it during the first Gulf War.
Yeah.
I mean, George W. Bush Sr., I think, they used the voice of God and looking glass technology on the Iraqi soldiers. And they all threw down their arms and marched to the front, and they firebombed that whole chain of people. And they bragged about using it, you know, and testing it, field testing it in the Iraqi people. So, yeah, we know this technology exists. It's interesting, you know, when they hit someone, one of us, an activist, with it, suddenly people say, oh, I know, you've made it up.
It's bullshit, just, yeah.
Protection, you know? Right. Rubbish, you know. I mean, I already had plenty of attention. I didn't need to do that. It was basically done so I would discredit myself.
Yeah.
You know? So I just get out there and start acting like a raving lunatic, which is what I did, you know. And it was interesting looking back at it as a third party and really looking back at the experience and going, wow, that's trippy how they can do that.
Yeah, there was some flat earth stuff. I mean, I didn't get into any of this at all because, first of all, I don't. I generally, I take people as I find them. Nobody is ever going to convince me that I should feel a certain way about somebody. I make my own mind up. I've done that my entire life, even as a young kid. But I remember people saying to me, Jesus, Max has lost at Richie's. He's gone on about flat earth and all this. And I just didn't pay any attention to it at that time. But then I realised that, you know, you'd not been yourself for a bit. And I'm prepared to accept it's plausible that they did, that somebody had a go. Yeah, why not? I mean, you were making sense talking about the fires, not just in Australia, but elsewhere around the world and what might be going on there. So I'm, like I said, I'm very open-minded. And of course, Barry Troer has been on my... You knew Barry Troer before I did. He's been saying for years, and he's totally credible, Barry. And I've had Christopher Busby. Nobody is a higher authority on EMF than Chris Busby. They've had this technology since the 60s to do things to people. And here's a question for you, and I don't want to spook you, by the way. I don't want to spook you. If they wanted to, they might have tried to attempt to induce you to commit a crime. A very serious crime.
They could have. It was really weird. I mean, if I'd been in town when that had happened, and I'm fortunate that I live in the country, if I'd been in town when that happened, I'd probably still be in the nut house.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely would have gone away. The neighbours or whatever would have called, you know, the men in white coats to come and grab me.
By the way, that's not politically correct. These days, you can't say nut house. It's one of a million things you're not allowed to say anymore, Max, because somebody might be triggered.
Oh, okay.
You can't say the grin.
I can say the grin bin, can I?
The loony bin. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, we've got advertisements on television here at the moment asking us not to use certain phrases because we never know. We might be standing alongside somebody who's had a mental health episode. Now, you and I, of course, we are humanitarian people. We are empathetic people. If I'm standing alongside somebody and, you know, they've had a mental health issue, of course, we have sympathy for them and we wish them all the best. But the idea that you would tiptoe around the world for the rest of your life and not use certain words just in case, this is crazy. Yeah. And that's a whole other agenda, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Political correctness, it's a form of tyranny. It's self-censorship, so you don't ever say what you think. But yeah, I mean, I would have been locked up if people had seen me in that state, or you know, if I'd been in town. But I was able to get through it quite quickly, like within 10 days or 2 weeks. But it was a flipping of my personality. It was like, I don't know how they did it, but all of my past memories came up. I relived every deja vu I'd ever had.
No way.
And then there was all of this other stuff that was in there as well that I didn't know whether it was past life stuff or. And it was just a complete jumble. And I was having impulses to do things that I had no control over, like going to town and upload videos and certain things I just had to get done, which were not me. And I didn't have anybody around to say, hey, Max, listen, you're not behaving rationally. I kind of live by myself. So it was a bizarre situation to be in. But, I mean, I got through it okay. It was interesting. When I reported on it, I got emails from at least a dozen people who said they've had the same things happen to them. I got an email from one guy who was a host of a very popular radio show who said that the same thing happened to him and it's taken him 7 years and he's never recovered from it. And he got a lot of healing out of listening to me talk about it.
Sorry to interrupt. Let me say this. Again, just because I'll be accused of not doing my job. There will be people listening who will say, love Max, love listening to this stuff, but when you're so close to it, and obviously you're not going to mention, and you won't mention the successful radio presenter, but when you're talking about these things, which are real, of course, these are real agendas, that maybe there's a self-fulfilling prophecy aspect to this, and maybe you imagine the attack. Now, I'm not saying that. I don't believe that. I don't believe, nor do I disbelieve. And I know you're a very rational man. But there will be people who say, when you talk about this stuff long enough and you're surrounded by it long enough, you could convince yourself it's happened to you. I'm just doing my job. Max.
Yeah, look, I don't think you could convince yourself of this. What I experienced was nothing like anything I've ever experienced. And for all the metaphysical stuff and EM stuff and UFO tech and secret tech that I've looked into,
it's all there.
At that time, there was no focus on that. My mind was full of my country burning to the ground, you know, a billion animals being torched. The depopulation and the fires that were happening here in this country, that was consuming me. That was my whole thought. Every show I was putting out was about the firestorm that was happening here. None of that tech and none of that thought was anywhere near my mind at all. So, you know, it certainly didn't come from my subconscious.
Yeah.
You know, I was lying in bed literally thinking about the fires, and suddenly this thing came down and hit my forehead, and I literally saw it come into the room and hit me. And then it was just a complete jumble for like 10 days. And it was like I said, it's like they flipped my personality. And I totally get how they've done it with people now. When I look at some of the, like David Shaler, who was doing that incredible work with the 7/7 bombings in London,
he
and suddenly thought he was Jesus Christ and started cross-dressing.
Do you remember that? And I mean, I'm still in touch with David. And when he comes on, now he hasn't been on for a long time, I must invite him back. He's very lucid, and more than lucid, and he's very shrewd, and he's got some very interesting things to say. But thanks for bringing that up. You're absolutely right. There you have a guy who went on the run with Annie Machon. The exposed, you know, assassination programs in MI5. Absolutely brilliant. The attempts to kill Gaddafi and all that. And Saddam Hussein. And all of a sudden, well said, all of a sudden. That's right. All of a sudden he
overnight.
Yeah.
Overnight, Richard.
Overnight. Yeah.
Overnight. He went to his website and the whole website was gone. And there's a picture of him saying he's the second coming.
Yeah.
Right there, you know. And even they did that to me, and it wasn't that I was the second coming. So I could see it because, you know, I'm supposed to believe I'm the chosen one, whatever the chosen one is.
Yeah.
And I saw it. I saw how they do it. I saw exactly how they put the programming in people's minds. And that's why when I was telling people, I was using inverted commas and saying, yeah, I'm supposed to be the chosen one. And I went, it's sick. It's sick how they do it. And I could see it. I can see exactly how they do it. And I can see why people run with it. And I sometimes look at that and I think the fortunate part about it is that I was awake. I was lying there with my eyes open when it happened. You know, had I been asleep and that thing had hit me and put all that in my head, I could have woken up thinking I'd had this epiphany.
And you stuck a miniskirt.
I can see how they do it.
You might have woken up and stuck a miniskirt on you and started carrying a crucifix on you. No, you never know. Yeah,
wasn't any of those thoughts in there, Richie? But I can see how I could have woken up thinking I just had this incredibly enlightening epiphany experience when it was actually technology because I saw it come into the room and hit me.
Let me ask you this question. I've wanted to ask you this forever and a day, but I never knew how to phrase it. So I'll ask you now. It's going to take me about a minute and a half to ask you the question. I have been very critical over the years of what has come to be called the Truther Industrial Complex. That phrase was coined by a guy in Boston in 2011. It's a very interesting phrase. And I've, having grown up in radio production and remembering journalism as it used to be, I know what a journalist is. And I'm not going to be told by anybody. A journalist will never attempt to insert himself or herself into the story. A journalist exists to present information to people that they otherwise wouldn't get. Important information. The journalist is there to challenge, whether it's the government or the local council, but it's also there to root out stories that are important, stories of injustice and stuff like that. But of course, the journalist should never attempt to become associated with that subject. They should never seek to attach themselves to that subject matter, whatever it is. And sadly, we've seen over the years, we've seen that in the independent media and so many people. They've gotten very fond of the attention and have, you know, attempted to become activist journalists, which means you're not a journalist. They've reveled in the fame side of it. And as I said, most importantly, they have sought to become the authority or to convince people they are the authority on any given issue. And it's devastated the independent media, most of which is absolutely worthless to me as a journalist. You've avoided that. I don't understand how you've managed to avoid it because you've always had a very big following and a very big support. But you've never done that. You've never become very fond of yourself or attempted to be messianic in any way, ironically. How did you manage that? Do you mind me asking you? Not to become that.
Well, it's because the more you discover, the less you realize you know. That's the honest way to look at it. I mean, people set themselves up as being an expert. They get a little niche that they put themselves into, and they want to, you know, I'm the I'm the this guy, I'm the false flag guy, or I'm the 5G guy, or I'm the this guy, you know, where it's all part of the one thing, you know, and all you really know is that information you've looked at, and you've got this little boxed view of the world, and you know, you don't really know. You've got to put it all together on the open stage and look at it, and it's an ongoing experience. I'll consider everything, but I'll believe nothing. You know, belief is the enemy of knowledge. I've always had that thought in my mind. So I just go where the flow is, Richie. And like I said, the more I know, the more I realize how little I know.
Yeah.
The more I find out, the more I realize how little I know. And I think it's important to just let things unfold the way they go and offer your opinion, but don't be too concerned with it being right. You know, I don't have any stake in anything. I don't put out blanket statements, so I don't have anything invested in being right in anything that I say. You know, I just put an idea out there and I offer it for consideration and, you know, lay all the cards on the table and let them fall where they may, and some things become self-evident. So that's just the way I've gone, Richie. I think it's important to remain objective and to not insinuate yourself over the information, like you say. You know, it's not about you. It's about freedom. I mean, that even the whole term, the truth movement, I think the truth is a loaded term, because what is the truth? The truth seems to be pretty subjective depending on what people want to believe, you know, and really it's about freedom. It's about having the freedom that we need to discover what the real truth is, because all you're doing is arguing about belief systems, and that very argument is creating the division which is necessary to prevent freedom from ever being created. So the whole concept of belief systems cancels itself out. You'll never be free if you're locked in your belief systems. And what this is about is freedom. And then we'll know what the truth is, because it will become self-evident and we won't have to argue about it.
Tell
you
what,
you've got to be open-minded. You've got to be prepared not to lock yourself into what you think and be so concerned at being right in everything that you say. So many people that you talk about, they don't want the truth. They just want to be right. They just want to win the argument. You know, and that's not what it's about.
No, mate. Worse again, they want to hear their own beliefs fed back to them by their truther of choice, which is terrible. And of course, the truther feeds on that and makes a living out of it. And you've avoided that.
That's why I've never monetized anything, Richie. I've never got anything for sale on my website. I've never monetized my account because I don't want commerce to get in the way, because this is not about any of that. This is about public service. This information needs to get out there. And I do what I do because it needs to be done, and for no other reason.
You need to come back more often, despite the fact it's a pain in the arse to you, because it's coming up for 4 o'clock in the morning there. We covered loads. Go to BitChute, go to thecrowhouse.com, go to Brand New Tube. Max mentioned other places as well. Follow him on Twitter at The Crow House. Do make it more often, mate. Come back every couple of months for a chat if you can. I'm prepared to meet you halfway, to be honest. When you do come back, if it's every couple of months, I'll start the show a little bit later on in the evening here, so that you're not getting up at 2:30 in the morning to prepare. But I love having you on. I've known you now since the TPV days in London. And I think you're a top man, and it's great to have you back on the programme. And I'm glad that you don't take it personally when you lose your YouTube channels. You just keep moving forward. As Rocky said in one of the Rocky movies, life ain't about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, Max. Final word to you, pal. Thanks for your time today. Love having you on.
Yeah, it's been good, Richie, and it's been kind of liberating being kicked off YouTube in a way. I don't have to worry about what I say anymore. I mean, it's kind of sad in some ways, but all that work still exists. There's a website called altcensored.com that managed to grab my entire YouTube channel when they deleted it, so it's still there on altcensored.com. So you can still get the information, and thanks for having me on, Richie. And yeah, we'll have to do it a little bit more regularly, and thanks for still doing what you do too, brother. I mean, your voice is needed in the UK. And we are really heading for those serious times that we knew were coming. I've said to people so often, there's a train coming, and when it hits, it will be sudden. There will be no warning, and it has certainly hit. And as you were saying, the ride has just about started, just about to begin. We've just reached the top of the ramp, and the roller coaster ride is just about to begin. So hang on to your hats.
And the result,
I'll see on the other side.
See on the other side. The result is not predetermined, hopefully. TheCrowHouse.com. Max, thanks, mate. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. And let's do it again. What are we, September? Let's do it again in early November, mate. It'd be lovely to have you back.
Not a problem.
Speak soon. The great Max Egan, live on Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Top man. Lovely to reconnect with Max. It's been too long since he was on the show with us. So there you go. That's about it for me today. Want to say thanks to Tony Gosling as well. Love having a Barney with Tony. Top man. Tony can take it and he can give it as well. He'll be back on the show real soon as well. Mark Windows with me tomorrow, Wednesday. You don't want to miss that. And it'll be terrific to catch up with Sarah Westall on Thursday. And I think I'll have one or two surprises for you between now and then as well. Until tomorrow at 5 o'clock, look after yourselves and one another. I've been the BBG. It ain't the BBC. See you soon. Bye now.